So what do Joseph, Jonah, Jesus, and John have in common besides our first initial? The Joseph I refer to is the favorite son of the biblical Jacob, great-grandson of Abraham of Old Testament fame. Nowadays, more people are familiar with Joseph through Andrew Lloyd Webber's Broadway musical, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. In fact, many people may be surprised to learn that Lloyd Webber got that story from the Bible. The story, in a nutshell, Joseph's jealous older brothers sell him into slavery. Joseph finds himself a servant to the Egyptian Pharaoh. Joseph's abilities in interpreting dreams enable him to rise to prominence in Pharaoh's court. Eventually, Joseph is able to help his brothers, even though they had done him harm so many years earlier. One of my all-time favorite Bible verses is Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, when Joseph forgives his brothers. He says to them, "You plotted evil against me, but God turned it into good in order to preserve the lives of many people who are alive today because it happened." Now, certainly Joseph never wanted to be sold into slavery, but God redeemed that awful situation. God made something good out of something bad. And then what about Jonah? Now, you know Jonah because of what? The whale. And for that matter, you probably know that the biblical book about Jonah does not actually say that he was swallowed by a whale, but rather by a big fish. And that happened when God asked Jonah to do something that Jonah didn't want to do. And Jonah tried to get out of it by leaving town on a boat. According to the story, God told the fish to swallow Jonah to give him a time out to reconsider God's request. And then a few days later, also at God's command, the fish spit Jonah out onto a beach. Eventually, Jonah reluctantly walked to the big city of Nineveh and told them to shape up, just as God had originally requested Jonah to do. Jonah told them to shape up, and they did, which angered Jonah. You see, he didn't think they deserved God's forgiveness. So Jonah went off and moped about how he thought God was too merciful to people who didn't deserve it. So that's Joseph, that's Jonah. Now about Jesus. You know, when we hear the story in the Bible that Jill just read about Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, normally it's toward the end of wintertime, not the middle of July. And during that time of prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus could see that life's walls were closing in on him. He could see that betrayal and arrest, that torture and execution were very real possibilities for him. And that's why Jesus prayed these words, "Father, if you will, take this cup of suffering away from me. Not my will, however, but your will be done." Did Jesus want to die? No, I certainly don't think so. Even Jesus didn't want to suffer, but he was able to surrender his will to the greater will of the divine parent of us all. So there's Joseph, Jonah, Jesus, and yes, now John, me. Last Sunday, you heard from our church's kids who had just returned from the week-long mission trip. We had attended a work camp in Middletown, Ohio, near Cincinnati. A work camp means that the kids put in about 6 hours a day doing construction tasks, like, replacing handrails, installing drywall, building porches, replacing steps, that sort of thing. When the kids and I each registered for the camp, the organizers had this online survey that we had to take. It asks us on a scale of 1 to 5 to rate our ability at two things. Painting, because you do a lot of house painting, interior and exterior, to rate our skills at painting and at carpentry tasks. I mean, are you a master painter or do you just know not to drink the paint? Are you an experienced carpenter? Or are you not quite sure how to drive a nail? That sort of thing. So, I can do painting. I don't love it, but I can do it. So, I gave myself a 4 on the scale of 1 to 5 for that. I'm quite conservative about my carpentry skills. I can use power tools, but I think I ranked myself about a 2 on the scale that went all the way up to 5. And when you go on these work camps, they give you a list of tools and supplies to bring, but you don't know what project you're actually going to do until you're there at the work camp at the opening night's worship, service, and then meeting. And I just remember thinking to myself in the weeks and days leading up to that, just don't ask me to build a wheelchair ramp. I'd helped with one many years ago when one of our former members, Reed Roy, you might remember him. Reed and I were two of the adult advisors. We were on a mission trip to Springfield, Missouri, and we built a wheelchair ramp there, and we succeeded largely because of his experience. But here I was saying to myself, don't ask me to build a wheelchair ramp. Don't ask me to build a wheelchair ramp. It's the last thing in the world I wanted to do. So after the work camp's opening worship, they broke us into 69 different work crews. Now, none of our kids were in my crew. I had 5 kids from 5 different states. They handed out the assignment packets, and one of the youth in our crew number 19 opened the packet, and he read aloud, "Crew 19, you will be building a wheelchair ramp." Oh, come on, God. You can't be serious. We were to build a wheelchair ramp for Sharon's mobile home. Now, each work site had assigned to it a local adult with construction experience to serve as kind of a site consultant. But the site consultants oversaw 6 or 7 or 8 different work sites, so our site consultant would stop by once, maybe twice a day. Jimmy would talk through the process with us, but when it came time to actually executing the plan, it was up to me and 4 high school kids and 1 middle school kid. Now, our crew did include one boy whose father did some carpentry, so this boy had some skill, probably comparable to mine, maybe a little better. And that's not saying much. Now, we had brought tools, but we didn't have everything that would have been ideally helpful for this situation. So we did our best to line things up, to make things level that were supposed to be level, to build the slope of the ramp at the proper angle, 1 to 12. Now, the work camp people provided each crew also with this helpful booklet. I wish I could have kept it, but we weren't allowed to. This helpful booklet that had information about the most common jobs that crews face, like how to build steps, how to hang drywall, how to paint a house, how to build a wheelchair ramp. But because of the size and the angle of the lot and the little driveway for Sharon's mobile home, we couldn't build a straight ramp. Nor could we build one that had a switchback. You've seen those. They just kind of go this way and then back this way. No, our site consultant concluded that we would need to build a custom-made, designed in our heads, boomerang-shaped ramp. So the boys and girls took turns using manual post hole diggers to dig 13 post holes 2 feet deep into tough, muddy clay soil. I supervised. And then as we were getting ready to set the posts into those holes, we learned that the trailer park forbid putting concrete into the ground because the trailer owners only rent the land. They can't put something in the ground. So we had to devise a way of securing those ramps, supporting posts, by placing them and then repacking the clay in around the posts and tamping it down to make it solid while also keeping the posts in line and level. And then three of our crew had to learn how to use power drills in order to drive screws. One of the benefits of a work camp is that you always learn some new skill, and I learned a new one on this trip too. Now, by work camp rules, based on their ages, only one of the kids on our crew was old enough to use the power saw along with me. So that made things kind of interesting. Oh, and by the way, the lumber that had been delivered to the site for our project wasn't the right lumber for a wheelchair ramp. It was more like the lumber for building a massive party deck. And so we had to keep busy, and we did keep busy digging post holes while we waited to unload the new delivery of lumber and then load up all the wrong lumber and the other unnecessary supplies that had been delivered to our site. So take our limited expertise, our insufficient tools, our wrong lumber delivery, and add the biting flies, the blistering sun, the sweltering heat, and the drowning humidity, and you can see that there were a lot of factors that had told me that building a wheelchair ramp was the last thing I wanted to do. However, I can't wait to do it again. Now, I can't be alone in facing prospects that I don't want to deal with. Joseph, Jonah, even Jesus had to. I imagine that you do too. At some points in life, maybe at many, we need to change our point of view in order to face up to the challenge before us. God asks us to surrender our ego, to surrender our strong-willed certainty, our sense of self-importance, our expectation of competence. God asks us to surrender ourselves to the power of God, so that God's power can be displayed through what we do. This week I came across a poem that describes the benefit of learning to see life's challenges from a different point of view. We've all heard that familiar saying, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade, right? Well, this poem uses the metaphor of the game of golf to suggest ways of surrendering to the challenge in front of us. Now, I know many people don't play golf, and there is nothing more boring, if you're not a golfer, than to hear golf stories. But I think this poem doesn't use a lot of insider golfy language. So I think it speaks profound truth in a simple way about acceptance and surrender. It's called The Golfer's Prayer, written by a guy named Jim Hyatt. Here's what it says. Lord, as I walk down the fairways of life, help me to realize that my greatest opportunities to learn are actually when I am in the rough, where I discover things I never knew were there. And when I'm in the deepest sand, where I learn that there is a time to walk softly and clean up after myself. And when I'm playing in a scramble, where I learn that I have friends to make up for what I lack. And when I find the water, where I learn that some things are better left alone. And when the ball rolls into the hole for that wonderful par, Lord, help me realize that all good things come from you. Do you have some challenge in your life that you need to surrender to so you can accept the reality of the situation and move through it? Are you facing a build the wheelchair ramp challenge that seems so overwhelming that it stops you in your tracks? I mean, it might be something as mundane as resolving to tackle that household project that you put off for so long that you can't even remember it not being on your to-do list. Or maybe there are some arrangements you've been meaning to get to, like having a lawyer draw up a will, or signing healthcare powers of attorney and living wills. I mean, all things that you know would be good, but because they force you to confront your mortality, you've just never quite gotten around to them. Or maybe it's finally setting aside the time and registering to take that certification course that would be so helpful to you. Maybe you need to get around to having that long postponed conversation that needs to happen. And maybe it's deciding to accept Jesus not only as an intellectual inspiration and as a model citizen, but also to accept him as the master and guide of your life. What you've been reluctant to do might be a matter of letting go of something that you've been clinging to for way too long, but it's keeping you from moving on. So maybe you are, or someday will be, facing a ramp you don't want to build. What can we learn from the example of Joseph and Jonah and even Jesus? Recognize that your reluctance also presents you with an invitation to surrender. To let go and let God.